And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source of insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to discussing some of fascinating ways to spend $2 trillion to redirect the economy toward a low carbon future. Tune in.
Well, Mariah, I am not an expert in finance, but I play one on a podcast. So we're going to talk about finance, some finance stuff tonight. Context for the whole thing is that with the expected inauguration of Joe Biden, what he has in his bag of tricks is a plan to spend somewhere around $2 trillion over the next few years to try to address climate change and get the economy going on. And this all comes under the rubric of the Green New Deal. We've talked about this stuff a lot. What would $2 trillion buy you? Well, it's probably going to buy you lots of power plants, renewable energy power plants, photovoltaic, wind. It's probably going to buy you lots of infrastructure, of a smart grid, of electric charging stations. It's probably going to buy you a lot of remediation of oil wells that are often orphaned. It's probably going to buy you a lot of sort of environmental justice efforts to try to help disadvantaged communities. It's probably going to buy you a lot of work retrofitting triple deckers so they're more energy efficient, right? If you know what a triple decker is, right? People's homes. So there's a lot of money to be spent. And the problem is that not all that spending, since it's going to be government spending, not all of it is profitable. So you may have $2 trillion to spend, and you want to leverage that money into getting other people to do some of this stuff under a market economy. Some of the things that would need to be done, just there's no market incentive, right? It's hard to make money at this stuff because the time frames are so long. Like building a smart grid, very few investors are going to make money in a sufficiently short time frame to invest in rewiring the entire nation's electrical grid. Ain't going to happen, right? And on top of that, a lot of times spending on these projects gets bogged down in Congress, right? Where every two-bit Congress critter gets to try and affect the way the money is spent. Right? So there's all the spending $2 trillion is not as easy as it might sound. There is an article in a magazine called The American Prospect. It's online, written by someone named Saul Amarova. And it is a proposal of a way that we could, in fact, practically and with good benefit, spend that $2 trillion, spend that money, and redirect the economy. The proposal basically says that there has to be some sort of a federal, in funny words, a federal entity. That means some organization like the Federal Reserve or the Department, the Treasury Department or something, some federal entity that has broad authority to identify projects, specify them, and fund them, right? Because then if that organization is responsive to the democracy, it will pick out good projects to do and spend that money in a timely way. And it turns out there is an existing precedent, a previous example of this kind of an idea. And it's something called the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, which was set up, believe it or not, in 1932 or 1933 in the depths of the New Deal with the stated goal of basically lending money into the economy and financing various kinds of big projects. Like I think they probably did the Tennessee Valley Authority, right? What in 1932, what individual investor was going to build a Hoover Dam, right? Nobody. That's a federal, that's a project you do long term because it's the right thing to do. Okay. So this proposal is to have some analogous organization. And what they've come up with is a concept called a National Investment Authority, right? So the NIA, National Investment Authority, which would be basically this board of governors, much like the Federal Reserve, which is another opaque agency. But I mean, the Federal Reserve is all set up. It's one thing that's running. The National Investment Authority would be a bunch of smart people. And then you would have the Treasury Department. And what's interesting is the Treasury Department prints money, the Federal Reserve loans money and controls the interest rates, and this National Investment Authority would kind of be between those two organizations getting money to do good things. And the way the National Investment Authority would do good things is through two sub-agencies. One would be called the National Infrastructure Bank, which would basically make loans to get credit, to make money making loans into big publicly beneficial projects. Like I say, I mean, I would say that rebuilding a smart grid across the whole United States is kind of the equivalent of building the Hoover Dam, right? I mean, how are we going to get all that wind in the North Dakota plains where it's generating electricity like crazy? How do you get all that electricity to New York City, right? You need a national effort to do that. And the National Infrastructure Bank would fund that. And what's beautiful, I'll stop in a minute, Mariah, because I'm going a long time. We'll stop in a minute. But what's beautiful is this National Infrastructure Bank would get money, as much money as it needed from the Federal Reserve in order to fund these kind of projects, so that even though the payoff was very slow, took a long time, and may not be like spectacularly productive each quarter, there'd be long-term safe payment because the National Infrastructure Bank would be backed up by the U.S. dollar, which makes it a great way to take these, you know, how are you going to put an electric charging station everywhere in the United States so people can get electric vehicles, right? These are big projects that are hard to make money at, but they're publicly beneficial. How could you? So the National Infrastructure Bank is a good idea. Go ahead, Mara.
So you say they're hard to make money at, but I think that they're hard to make money at the beginning. But with time, that's why we have to shift away from this short-termism, this short-term thinking, and be thinking about the payoffs from long-term investment in these. Sure, getting the infrastructure set up for charging stations everywhere is expensive, but then you're making money off of the electrons that you're selling. Right. So you get a payback. It takes a while before you can return that value to your shareholders. And if you're looking at, the return on investment from quarterly or annually, that's a problem. But if you're looking at the return on investment with more long-term thinking, then it starts to make all of this possible. And I think, as you mentioned, part of the key is to authorize a green bank, right? To get the banks also putting their investments into these green projects and supporting them and giving them the backing that they need to move forward. And actually, a lot of banks are doing this. I think there's at least 17 states and localities in the United States that have green banks for this kind of mm-hmm. these kinds of projects. And in fact, I read that and I was thinking, well, I should go find one of those and put my money in it, right? Because I mean, you want to keep your assets safe. And
that's a fascinating point, which needs to be made, is the following thing. Because this National Infrastructure Bank that is making loans to people to do these publicly beneficial things like building a smart grid, because that's backed up by the federal government, all of a sudden it becomes safe for pension funds, like the California Teachers Retirement Fund, right, which is billions and billions of dollars. Instead of going to BlackRock, where they're trying to make money in the private market, these pension funds can put their money into the public National Infrastructure Bank. It's backed up by the federal government. They get steady returns, and it's the capital, basically the capital of the people, right? The people's savings go into doing good things for the society, and that's a virtuous cycle. Right, and those investments are, I would say they're probably not as spectacular like blue chip stocks, right? They're reliable, small, you know, you need to take that into account, but it's safe. And that's where the pension wants to be. And that, I mean, we can talk about that.
Is interesting though, right? Like smart cities. I think that's a technology that's gonna grow, and it's a good place to invest. You know, I'm talking about smart cities. Where this you know, this sort of the cities are community, the buildings that are using energy are all kind of talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And when one of them needs a high energy load, if the other ones have the option to you know, shut down or to reduce their energy load, they do. And you know, they run things at night, high energy activities. Processes, manufacturing lines, they go at night so that they're not overloading the system during the peak hours of the day, those kinds of things. So that smart city technology, I think, has a lot of potential. And there's, you know, sustainable agriculture has a lot of potential. So there are some interesting, I think, and potentially a little bit, you know, what's the word, technologically advanced, cool things that are part of these investments too.
Absolutely. There are things that are very hard to do from the private side, right? Because building a smart city is a tough thing to do. Right?
Yeah.
So there's just to review, we got this National Investment Authority, which is like the top overarching thing. Underneath that is the National Investment Bank that's loaning out money. The other side of the coin here, the other parallel to the bank is something called the National Capital Management Corporation. This one is interesting because the National Capital Management Corporation can invest, taking what's called an equity position. So we can identify a startup company like, let's say, Tesla, right? Put money into it, right? And then because this National Capital Management Corporation recognizes that this company is good for public good, can put money into it, and then as that company takes off, it will reap the benefits back into dividends to the people who are the public people who put money into the National Capital Management Corporation, right? And this is something that would be then backed up by the federal government, so you wouldn't be losing money, and it's a great way to take equity stakes and get, like, we talked in the show the other day about green hydrogen, right? Green hydrogen means hydrogen produced using green electricity, right? So if you use the green electricity to make hydrogen, you end up with a net gain of energy and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, that's a technology that you could invest in because people might make money at it. You get in on that with this National Capital Management Corporation, you're going to make money, and it's going to pay off to the public's benefit through dividends back to pension funds, right? I just think that is a rather those two things. One, a bank that is lending big money for big public infrastructure, and a sort of equity company that is looking for smart startup companies that are going to do incredible things, and funding both of those with public money because the public money can support the long-term public good. I mean, that's a great idea as far as I'm concerned, right? And there's so many good benefits. I mean, aside from having pension funds, which is the money owned by ordinary people in their pension fund, right? Besides having that invested in a publicly beneficial investment through these things, if a place like the National Capital Management Corporation were to invest in a company like, say, Tesla, right, as an equity owner in Tesla, they could insist that the minimum wage at Tesla be, I don't know, a fair minimum wage, that the healthcare be fair, right, that they not shut the company down if it starts to go out of business. I mean, you can now begin to impose these social goods because you've got an equity stake in the company, right? You can insist that it doesn't set up camp in the poorest neighborhood and take advantage of the least politically powerful people to pollute their neighborhood. I mean, it's all – I like it a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a good point, that – if done, we've talked a lot about the Green New Deal, which takes some of these principles, and if it's done incorrectly, it might continue the sort of long-standing income and wealth inequities. But if you take the approach that you're saying with this sort of investment in keeping the social good on high, you progress forward with the Green New Deal in a way that lifts communities and supports them.
Yeah. And I think that the thing that the author of the article points out, that the risk for this whole endeavor, right, is the risk of regulatory capture. So this is the concept where the industry somehow gets all the seats at the table, right? This National Investment Authority, all of a sudden, it's all Jamie Dimon and the heads of Goldman Sachs. Those are the people that are on that board. Well, okay, all of a sudden, the public good has gone away. You've lost that aspect of it. So the design of the program has to be such that the connection to the democracy and the connection to people's needs is maintained. And the article makes the point that the people who sit in this National Investment Authority Board of Governors are not just finance people, right? They're probably, you know, they should represent people of color. They should represent different kinds of neighborhoods. They should represent industry. They should be a broad cross section so that it can't get captured by private capital, right? And then driven off to do whatever they want to do with it. But if you can manage that risk, if you can manage the regulatory capture risk to make sure that this organization stays true to the ideal of doing publicly beneficial investments, I like it. And just to rewind back to where we started, what this whole proposal allows you to do is to spend Joe Biden's $2 trillion effectively to get what we need to get to over the next decade, right? It's a mechanism for spending all that money that's not going to get tied up with Mitch McConnell stopping everything every chance he gets, right? So,
yeah.
There you go, Mariah.
Sounds
shall we do it?
Me.
Shall we vote? Yeah, I got thumbs up. You and I, we're agreeing.
We're thumbs up.
Okay. All right. Well, we will put up a link to the article, various articles relating to this. Quite an interesting topic. That'll be on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have a question about this or a comment, please send it to an email. Send us an email at podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what you think about this. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using any of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask your friends to do the same thing and rank us. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. Well, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.